goes up again when we get to the blue line in 2019. The easy correlation you should be able to make there is the number of attacks that all of us are under is increasing every single year. And the stats from 2019 so far are holding out that we're doing about 140 breach events, are making it into the news every month. That's four a day, are making it into the news. And then there's an exponential number that are just not being publicly released that we're not telling people about because it's the companies were able to keep it quiet because there wasn't actual customer data leaked and they didn't have to do a breach notification. But when they do have to do a breach notification and it does become public and the news picks it up, we're looking at four a day as the average that are running through this. So it's not a matter of, you know, if you're ever going to be breached. It's going to happen. You just need to be ready for it and have the proper security posture, the proper response plans in place so that you know how to handle it when it does happen so that you can respond quickly. The same treasure trove of data, this gentleman also tracks the motivations behind each of the attacks. So for every one of the attacks in his database, he tracks, was this a criminal act where somebody was trying to make money, like with ransomware or business email compromise or stealing your credit cards? Or was it a cyber warfare attack like what we saw with Saudi Aramco or with Sony, where people broke in deliberately to burn data down and do destruction? Or was it a hacktivism attack, like somebody just wants to break in and alter a website in order to change their own public message, like when Fox News was breached a couple of months ago, and they changed a headline on Fox News' homepage. Right? That would be a hacktivism type of an attack as well. And you should be able to spot a trend here as well. 3-4 years ago, cybercrime made up 75% of the total attacks that we were tracking, and every year that number has gone up. The number of attacks that fall into the cyber warfare and the cyber espionage category have held about the same year to year, but the number of incidents goes up, and the number of those that are criminal related goes up every single year. So the stats that we're seeing for 2019 show if the last 2 months hold out to what the first 10 have, we're looking at the amount of cyber activity that's evil on the internet being related to criminal is about 83% of all of the attacks. These are run by organized crime groups, the mafia groups, the Irishman movie you just saw. Those guys, as they've gotten older, have realized that there's a lot less overhead on the internet, but they can still make just as much money. The total narcotics trafficking industry, all of the marijuana, opium, cocaine, and other drugs all over the globe that moves across borders amounts to about a $650 billion a year industry. Cybercrime crossed $650 billion a year and a half ago and is going to be well over $700 billion in losses combined across everyone across the globe this year. We're losing that much money every single year to cybercrime events. Think about that number. The largest bank robbery in the history of banks was the Iraqi Central Bank. They got hit in 2003. U.S. troops landed in Iraq. The whole place went to chaos. The government dissolved and ran for the hills. And in the middle of all that chaos, a bunch of guys in ski masks with AK-47s and a dump truck rolled into the Iraqi Central Bank, the Iraqi equivalent of the Federal Reserve, and emptied the vault. And they made off with $1 billion. We're never seen again. Because when you got $1 billion, you can disappear. That was the largest bank robbery in history. Cybercrime is doing that twice a day, every single day, all year long. This is a really major problem, and the solutions are not difficult. We just need to raise your security posture up. We need to do a lot of the basic stuff, like the gentleman that were on my panel earlier were talking about. Actually knowing what your assets are, being able to track patches and ensure the patches are applied regularly, setting up a proper defensible network so that you can both prevent and then also respond quickly when there is an incident, are all things that we can do that will help drive these numbers back down so that hopefully some point in the future, I'll get to see these numbers start coming back down the other direction instead of continuing to rise. So, to that end, what does the ISAC offer you is we provide you intelligence about these attacks that I've just been talking about, down to the tactical level. I'm going to tell you what the IP addresses are, what was the malware, what were the domain names that were associated with these attacks, so that you can then go adjust your security posture by adding custom rules to your firewalls or to your antivirus so that you can block these things from happening. This is like an inoculation, like vaccines. If one of us catches the flu in here and we extract out what does that flu virus look like, create a vaccine for it, and then we can go inoculate everybody else in the room, and now this doesn't become a pandemic. Cyber threat intel is that for cyber events. What we're going to do is take the threat data away from one person that gets breached. We're going to share it back out to everybody else. You can raise your shields up and proactively defend yourself against a real attack before that real attack actually happens to you. And the way the model is set up to work, it's all of this rides inside of the CDSA. So if you're signed up as a CDSA member, you're automatically on board to receive all of these services. You just have to know they exist and come get them. If you want more information, that's our website or Harass Guy. And whatever questions you have. And then we'll get back to the happy hour here.
Any questions?
Chris, I just want to comment again, glad to work with the city and the city's cyber lab. Strategically, we want to work with him and ISAC more. So supporting him is going to help us help him too. So I just want to throw that.
So what was the process to get on the list and all that?
Go to our website, meisac.org. There's a products page. And you can sign up for each of our individual products from there. And then I'll go through a vetting process with his membership list to see if we let in or not. Everybody is vetted to get into that data. So if we're worried about data sharing and such, it's only people in the media entertainment industry that make it into the list. I have to do a background checks on everybody that signs up.
Question?
Yes. I want to piggyback on the topic we had earlier when we were there for the deep fake.
Yes.
So what are you doing for deepfake?
Ooh, for deep fakes. So
that's tough.
No, yeah, it is. So groups like quantum, I forget the second word.
Integrity.
Quantum integrity, yes. Groups like them are working on the technical side of spotting the fakes. And then what we do on our side is track who posted it, who created it. So if something like that gets shared out in social media, one of the studios identifies it, flags it, and then shares their information back with me to say, this is a Twitter handle or whatever handle it is that was sharing out fake manipulated data. Or also in the same kind of concept when it comes to anti-piracy investigations, if a video is getting shared up on Reddit or YouTube or something, they'll share back the username of who's sharing it, or an IP address or an email or that identifying mark is for who the bad person is in that conversation. With us, we maintain that database, and then you, the next time you see a video and you're wondering, is this coming from a real source, a trusted source, or is it coming from somebody who has spread deepfakes in the past? You can look it up in our database and see if that handle or email address is been associated with bad things in the past.
It's the corroboration also that's critical, right? Because if somebody just said, okay, by the way, this is a deep fake, and we ran out there and broadcast it out, and in the background didn't have the data on its actuality, and how that community approach, it would expose us and essentially make us liable, right? So we're really cautious about what we send out in our alerts, and that's what's so critical about the community and the vetting process around it. And also, honestly, the software drives a lot of that pile on, so to speak, the evidence.
But that's more of a policy solution that needs to be in place in order to address the deep fake, right? Because what you're talking about is reactive after the fact. How do we prevent it even going on the internet?
Are you talking about a multi-million dollar effort, industry effort?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And honestly, by the way, it's not that we couldn't do it as CDSA, but the fish that we're frying are much more practical and much more near term. They're things that we need to solve in the next 2 or 3 months. When you talk about that also, the most important piece on the deep fake side, and I talked about the cheap fake, right? The cheap fake is the Pelosi video where they just slowed down the audio. So it's a fake, but it didn't cost them any money to do it, right? Deep fakes are expensive, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes state-sponsored, ugly and horrible, but the reality is to have a vetting body there that can catch it beforehand, it's also not just media entertainment. I was going to say it's mostly news organizations, right? Right. News organizations are making the challenge because they have to disseminate, spread news information. And I would also say that it's also up to the Googles and the Amazons yes. and the Apples.
Yeah.
They have to fund it more. They have to fund the technology. Honestly, I don't think it'll happen in 2021. It's going to take some time. And in the interim, we're all going to be confused as hell. Right? Because the other thing is who's your authenticator and validator? Is it Fox News or is it CNN? Because they may have two totally disparate opinions about what is real and what is fake. Based on that,
you mentioned that the news is part of
entertainment media. But saying that, it's part of these larger organizations. And right now, we're focused on motion picture and television content, snacky content.
Yeah.
So, I mean, ultimately, it's about getting there, right? It isn't just proof. You know, we're not anointed and funded. You know, honestly, it's something like the NBA would really want doing that from an organization. And I also think that you'll see vendors making investments to help everybody along. So there could be a quasi-federated solution on that. All right, we're out of time.
Is not the deepfakes presentation, but the one right before that, where Alex was from Shift was talking about the screener incident from February. The collaboration that happened between all the content owners and with Shift and with some of those other groups, that's exactly what we facilitate and provide for everybody, is the ability for you to all work together on bigger incidents like that.
All right, awesome. I wish I could give you much more of the floor, but we do need to move along. Thank you so much. Chris Taylor, ladies.